Well, today we are going to talk about principles governing sex within marriage, and then get into a discussion on masturbation. So, I still expect participation from you all, but we were talking about a little bit earlier. I mean, this is kind of practical ethics, right? Is it right? Is it wrong? I mean, especially in trying to help young people, you know, how to help young people kind of think through the issue. We got sons or even daughters. But before we kind of get into that, I think it's important to kind of establish principles governing sex within marriage. So here's a scenario here. After years of ingesting pornography, Wolfgang repented of his sins and gave his life to Christ. Shortly after his conversion, he met someone special and they were engaged to be married. Even though he has been a changed man in many areas, when you talk to him, you find out that his background in pornography has greatly influenced his sexual expectations. You also find out that his fiance loves Harlequin romance novels. Do you guys remember those? And has been devouring them for years. So who or what has shaped this couple's view of sex?
Media.
Yeah, the media, right? And what are some of the messages that would come through those sources? Be some messages that would come through those words.
It'd be for personal satisfaction more than a team.
Taking more than giving. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are some other expectations? I think, like in pornography, that women are sexually aggressive. Yeah, that's the norm. How about, let's say, Harlequin romance novels? Or Amish romance novels? You know? It's okay if they're Amish.
Well, I was going to say, they don't.
Yeah. But there are some, like, expectations there that it kind of creates, right?
I think of Proverbs 9:17, stolen water is sweet, and bread in secret is pleasant. So it kind of sends this message that there's a part of the forbidden fruit type of, the fact that it's wrong is what makes it more pleasurable or exciting.
Yeah, the thrill of the hunt, you know, is this okay? You know, kind of the breaking. Yeah, that's a very, that's an issue that's very present.
And it kind of conveys this message that pursuing those desires is something that ought to be hidden and done in secret, mm-hmm. and not something you're proud of, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So sin is sexy, mm-hmm. and so when you take away the sin, it's not sexy anymore. Yeah, other thoughts?
I mean, I think it's always like the initial sexual acts that are glorified, because it's the chase, it's the hunt, it's the new, mm-hmm. or the forbidden, or whatever. Like, you don't have a lot of romance novels written about people who've been married for 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Or have three young kids.
No.
Yeah.
Ever. but that gives the idea that this is most interesting and best right at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Which anyone who's married for a while is like, wow, that's stupid.
Yeah.
But but you know, like, it makes sex a conquest. Mm-hmm. Rather than an ongoing relationship, and mm-hmm. that's the part that's thrilling and glorified and all those things. It's like the will we or won't we, and like, guess what, once you're married, that's not a big question anymore. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
yeah, no, that's a good
just
point.
Just from the female perspective, just seeing it as this, you know, seduction process and all of that is really damaging once you're married and have to do it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any other thoughts on that? And I just kind of bring this up because, I mean, the education, the expectations that people have is more shaped by the world than we know. And I think unless you purposely recognize that and reverse it, you're going to go in with, or maintain expectations that'll just leave you disappointed because the world's priorities for the sexual act is different from what God wants it to be. So when you look at, just the following verses, you know, it's like, what was the Bible, a sex manual? Well, it doesn't focus on technique, it focuses on the relationship. Yeah, because that is the purpose of sex, is to bring a couple together, right? To bind them, to make them one flesh, so that when they do procreate, they do it together, right? It's to serve one another. They have this world of pleasure and joy. It's to protect each other from temptation. And so the whole purpose of sex is to bring people together. And so what is the Bible sex advice? Well, it's centered on maintaining a solid relationship. And so some of the principles, interestingly enough, all deal with great relationships, right? In everything I showed you, this is Acts 20:35, I showed you that by working hard in this manner, you must help the weak and remember the words of the Lord Jesus, that he himself said is more blessed to give than to receive. Philippians 2:3-4, do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourselves. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others, right? So sex is not an occasion to use the other person. It's an occasion to serve the other person. Okay, so that is like one of the foundational principles of the Christian sex life. Like in all things, it's better to give than to receive. It's better to serve than to take. And that's kind of even the service in 1 Corinthians 7:3-5. The husband must fulfill his duty to his wife, and likewise the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise also the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Stop depriving one another, except by agreement for a time, so that you may devote yourselves to prayer and come together again, so that Satan may not tempt you because of the lack of self-control. And so this is, the way of serving is by regular giving to keep you from what? From sin, right? And incidentally, this kind of shows you why withholding sex, is a weapon. And both parties can do this. Women, obviously, in general, have a lower sexual appetite than men. So the men are almost at the mercy of their wives. But I've seen many cases when the husband is into pornography and into masturbation, which we'll talk later on. And he can say, I'm fine without this part of my relationship because I've got this virtual prostitute over here. And so in both cases, I mean, you see how it begins to just really start to create a real distance resentment in a couple. Yeah. Feel free to chime in if you want. I'm fully expected to do a lot of monologuing today. And then 1 Corinthians 8:12, and so by sinning against the brethren and wounding their conscience when it is weak, you sin against Christ. And so I think doing anything that makes the other person uncomfortable. Now, I will say this, that just because both people say my conscience is not bothered doesn't make it okay. Right? Is it okay to watch pornography together? My conscience isn't bothered. Is yours? No, it's fine. Let's do it. Do you know what I'm saying? That's not a conscience issue. That's an obedience issue. But there might be some other things that might be a conscious issue, and that would be something where if the relationship is strong, because you're doing all these other parts that the Bible calls you to, you'll be able to have a Christian conversation about it and work that out. Okay? So not a lot of mystery here. I mean, it's just like any relationship. You serve, you give, you love, you protect their purity, you protect their holiness. I mean, that's kind of what's what drives it?
I'd say that, like in that verse, where we get the idea of that they're fulfilling one another, their physical desires, and kind of helping so that they're not tempted because of lack of self-control. And it also, and it says, you know, come together in a sense, you know, it just continually helps that, you know, you're constantly having things, big or small, that you disagree about, that maybe small conflicts, and just that continually coming together is a submitting of yourself to, you know, have that physical sign of, I'm putting you ahead of myself, I'm putting your desire ahead of myself.
Yeah.
And it does, it's helpful for that relationship aspect.
Yeah, and the thing is we're not co-parents, and we're not roommates. You know, when you engage in intimacy as a married couple, you remind yourselves, we are married. You know, this is the world that we share together, and only we share it. So that's why, if you've ever heard the term makeup sex, that's why it's a beautiful thing, right? Everything's okay. You know, we are together. We are husband and wife again. Just a refreshment of that relationship. Yeah. Any more comments? Thank you for your courageous comment, by the way. Yeah. But it's good input. Do you know what I'm saying? But,
yeah.
But I mean, it's kind of like, and one of the reasons why I'm intentionally talking about this is like, where do people get their messaging?
Well,
from the media. Yeah. So if we don't talk about this stuff, you know, as a church amongst each other, and we just kind of bury it, it's not going to help us to be renewed in this area of our minds.
I think one other thing, even if we don't feel comfortable talking about it as a class, just talking about it as a husband and wife, because some of the things you talked that we were talking about, like you know, putting the other's needs ahead of one another, just making sure that you're not, that you kind of work through awkwardness of talking about understanding one another the best way you possibly can, so that whatever it is, and in terms of frequency or whatever, you understand your spouse. And you're doing what's the most loving thing for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's even if you've been married for many years, it's sometimes awkward.
Yeah, and if you do have some issues and want to talk to somebody about it, I mean, pick somebody who's godly, who you can trust, and go from there. And I'd even say, you know, to all of you singles, I mean, this is really important that you guys have the right expectations, you know, going into it. You know, that it's not about using, it's about loving, it's about giving. And I'd say the best thing to cultivate a healthy sex life right now is to be a servant and to be a giver. Okay? You know, that sex is not what you get out, it's what you give. And if that's your disposition in life, it will show itself in every area, including the bedroom. And if you're really selfish in the bedroom, it probably shows itself in a lot of other areas in your life too. Does that make sense? So, speaking of that selfishness and the self-centeredness and the non-relational element of sex, we come to the topic of masturbation. Introduction, and I don't have a lot of questions here. I'm just going to model that. So feel free to weigh in. Social scientists estimate that perhaps as many as 90% of males have masturbated. However, this is not simply a male practice. While the figures are a bit lower for females, the majority of them have masturbated. The sexual practice, along with the self-loathing that often accompanies it, frequently dominates adolescence. Then again, this is not simply a problem of adolescence. Surveys show that it is practiced by many within a happy marriage that is sexually satisfying. Even more adults, male and female, practice auto-stimulation after divorce or the death of a mate and return to singleness. Thus, one cannot simply avoid addressing the practice. So, I have a couple of Christian ethics books, one by John Feinberg and one by Wayne Grudem, and both of them have a section on it. And part of it is, scripturally speaking, there is no clear prohibition against masturbation. There is one little narrative in Genesis where Onan would go into his brother's wife, but would not, would pull up. And that was seen as wicked because he wasn't fulfilling his duty to his brother to sire an offspring there. So apart from that, that's the only reference that you find in, that could potentially be in Scripture. And so the Christian view there's three. There is no clear prohibition against masturbation. Therefore, it can, in certain limited circumstances, be helpful. So like Dr. Dobson would have this view. Masturbation is always wrong, period. Or three, while the Bible does not clearly condemn masturbation, other factors strongly suggest that the Christian should abstain from it. And in this next section, I'll support this view. So when masturbation is clearly wrong. So Matthew 5, 27 through 29. You have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust for her has committed adultery with her already in his heart. And if your right eye makes you stumble, tear it out and throw it from you. For it is better for you that one of the parts of your body perish than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. So this is John Piper. John Piper, one thing I love about him is he doesn't shy away from these kinds of topics, right? He just says it like it is. This is what he says.
He also raised four boys.
But even the way he says it, he just goes for it. Yeah. Like you can just hear him just preaching this really loudly to a conference of 10,000 people. Right. Is masturbation wrong? Let me address the main issue, the issue mainly for men. I cannot imagine sexual orgasm in the loins without sexual image in the mind. I know there are nocturnal emissions, which I regard as innocent and helpful, but I doubt that they are ever orgasmic apart from a sexual dream that supplies the necessary image in the mind. Evidently, God has constituted the connection between sexual orgasm and sexual thought in such a way that the force and pleasure of orgasm is dependent on thought or images in our minds. So usually, I mean, pornography, clearly wrong, right? It's clearly wrong. It is forbidden. And so the idea is if you look at another woman with lust or another man with lust, that is inherently wrong. And that's often what fuels the act of masturbation. So 2 Corinthians 7, 3 through 5. And so this is... to answer the question, well, what if you're thinking about your spouse? It's not another person, it's your spouse. Well, 1 Corinthians 7, 3 through 5, we talked about this earlier, right? Let the husband fulfill his duty to his wife, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And so basically it talks about the two of them coming together, right? So can a husband or a wife fulfill their duty to each other if they're engaged in that activity on a regular basis? And I would say this too. I got this quote from C.S. Lewis, who is a... I think I don't agree with everything he says, but he has a lot of great insight on human nature. And he actually says this about masturbation. He says, for me, the real evil of masturbation would be that it takes an appetite which, in lawful use, leads an individual out of himself to complete and correct his own personality in that of another, and finally in children and even grandchildren, and turns it back and sends the man back into the prison of himself, there to keep a harem of imaginary brides, and his harem, once admitted, works against his ever getting out and really uniting with a real woman. And so that's the thing, like even in a marriage, so to speak, it's divorced from the relationship, which was designed to bring a husband and wife together, right? That was always meant to be a shared experience. Yeah, that's part of the design for it. And then, note number three, all things are lawful for me, but not all things are profitable. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be mastered by anything. So obviously it becomes an enslaving habit and something that you can't control, then that would be problematic. And so that's why those are the three major principles that move me away from saying that that is an acceptable practice. Other considerations? Masturbation separates the orgasm from the one-flesh relationship. The orgasm is not part of the shared experience which builds intimacy with your spouse. I already talked about that. Would you be comfortable telling your pastor or ministry leader that you engage in it regularly? How would you feel if the Lord came back right as he engaged in the act? Would he be comfortable telling you, younger believers, that such an action is okay? Would you respect a pastor or spiritual leader who is engaged in this activity regularly and without remorse? Does his action lead others to sin, like lust, and lead to other sins like lust and selfishness? Do such actions dampen your appetite for word and prayer? So, that would be my take on it. So, I don't expect you to have questions or comments, but if you do,
I've heard someone comment about looking at like your three cases. Someone that says that they're thinking of their spouse,
yeah.
And their question was, well, are you thinking about your selfish version of your spouse? Like, is it really your spouse that
yeah.
you're thinking about, or is it some version of your spouse that fits some
yeah.
some other desires? Right? So if mm-hmm. you're thinking of your true spouse, then why not engage with your spouse?
Exactly.
Other than this created imaginary version.
Yeah.
But that'd be hard if you're, say, like in the military and you're in mm-hmm. Afghanistan and your spouse is here.
Yeah.
I'm sure you would much rather engage with your spouse than be in Afghanistan.
And I think that's the place where the most, like, pure-hearted questions about this come up, is situations like that, where it's like, you're 9 months apart,
mm-hmm.
not by your own choice.
Mm-hmm.
Is it an option if your spouse is on the phone with you? I mean, like, there's all of those very specific things are what
mm-hmm.
people ask. And I think they ask it in, with the purest of intentions, like, especially when women ask, is this okay for me to help my husband do?
Yeah.
Help by being on the phone, basically, to bring
mm-hmm.
it closer to being a one flesh relationship.
Yeah.
And that's their goal, is to help keep his conscience closer to clean and, you know, all
yeah.
those things.
And I think the fact that it's a mutual activity
mm-hmm.
makes it different. So that would be my opinion on the matter.
Yeah, I think.
But it's something that still is to bring them together, where she's seeking to help and serve him in that way.
I think too, many times men don't have a realistic understanding if they've been practicing masturbation from a young age
yeah.
regularly. They don't know that they can physically stop.
Right.
And so they have this twisted or warped view of how their body functions.
Yeah.
And it takes, you know, if they're in pornography, kind of the same thing. It takes a time of separation for God to straighten that warped
yep.
mind out, in a sense. And as time goes by, they begin to understand that what previously was impossible, God
mm-hmm.
actually, it is possible.
Yeah.
And so there's that aspect as well. If it's a young man that's not married, that's seeking to be,
yeah.
you know, I've known many, many young men that have battled from pornography. This has been part of that.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's a week and then it's a month. It's just like
yeah.
learning.
Yeah, and
right.
it is possible. Yeah, and that would be the one thing in the military situation
mm-hmm.
is it might reintroduce the habit.
Yeah.
And there is a natural release apart from masturbation that is available for men. Through nocturnal emissions. So that's why, you know, we kind of tell young men, you know, it's like they don't, unless they have that option. And it's just, well, you were single before. But yeah, that's why it would be, even though that might be, that's the one situation I can't say that's wrong, you know what I'm saying? But I think it could lead
to. You wouldn't
to
encourage
other.
It. But.
I wouldn't encourage it and say there is some risk with that too on his end.
Because God does give us the ability to live self-controlled lives. And like you said, it's not a need. It's not like eating, or if you don't do it, you'll die.
Yeah.
Guarantee you won't die.
Yeah. some people have been single for a long time and been faithful to that. And so that's a way out, but I can't necessarily say that is clearly forbidden.
Right. And like in your case, if they're married, they need to seek whatever possible way they can to stay, you know, unified.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I appreciate you guys asking these questions because you're all thinking it, right? But, other questions? Talk to me after class. I'll talk to Becky after class. Okay. So, after your pastor teaches a lesson on the importance of sexual abstinence, a friend of yours candidly confides, okay, this is to a single friend of yours, that waiting for marriage seems like a real drag. How do you respond to this? I would ask you to share with the rest of the class, Becky. But
no.
How would you respond to that? I think there's a... there's kind of a fine line, right? Where, like, when I bring this up, it might be tempted to talk about, you know, a lot of the benefits. But as we do that, it would shame those of you in, you know, this room who didn't wait till marriage, right? And so there is a sense where we don't want to have, like, unnecessary shame. But if it was your kids, right? I mean, and you're talking in terms of your kids, and you, I would assume that all of you would want your kids to wait for marriage, right? Even if you didn't, why would he tell them? How would he explain it to them that this is what you need to do?
I think one thing that we, whenever you're talking about telling someone not to do something, it's I would always focus on primarily what they should do and why that's good, in a sense. And so, I wouldn't focus on just the negative consequences. I would say, this is the purpose of sex, and this is why it's a very, very a good thing in the way that God created it. And then I would say, in order to protect that and to have it be all that God wants it to be, we're obedient to the way that God created it, and when we're not, then it's destructive. It does more harm, and it robs from you, from your spouse, and it separates you from God because it's sin.
Yeah.
And you know, when the kids are appropriate age or when they're old enough, they may ask, and there may be a time where you say, "I really damaged this person or that person or myself because of this choice that I made." And that's, I think with anything, it's a great opportunity to drive deeper the gospel and say that, you know, you're not saved because you're a virgin until you're married. You know, this is a sin that God forgives and he came. But I want you to be obedient and to just be saved from the pain and from the kind of harm that that's been.
Yeah, and it is really interesting to see how many professing Christians in like the world of celebrity. Yeah, I'm a Christian, but you know, this is my baby mom. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of people who... And I've heard this parable, well, kind of a modern parable before. You know, the story of the rich young ruler. And Jesus said, "What must I do to follow you?" And he says, "Sell all that you have." If you're to rewrite that narrative today, you need to stop sleeping with your girlfriend. And it is fascinating to see how illicit sex is probably the number one reason why young people fall into the faith. I think it all comes down to that. So illicit sex is the pull of it. And it's celebrated as, you know, this is my identity, this is who I am, this is kind of what I'm living for. I mean, even in the ancient Near East, a lot of the pagan religion was built around sex. You'd go into temple prostitutes. You know, it was a way of creating like this sympathetic magic where that act of procreation would help your crop procreate. And so they kind of built this religious system around sex. And so there's always been a religious, spiritual component to it that the world has really co-opted to even pull people away from it.
And I don't know how much truth there is to this observation, but when Carissa and I have talked about this, it seems that it often is much deeper than just the sexual desire, and that for me as a kid, not growing up in a Christian home or knowing the gospel, there's this search for your identity and your meaning and love, that kind of whole, that when you grow up in a Christian home, or if you see the love of Christ and you see the gospel, there's a sense in which that's, even if you're not a believer, it kind of satisfies this love, affection, purpose, identity question. Mm-hmm. And I see and think about my own life about, there was this vacuum just wanting to be filled. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
And sex, you know, is such a powerful way for many people to seek to try and fill that.
Yeah, the intimacy and the closeness. Mm-hmm. So it's so there's a power to it, which harnessed in the right way is beautiful, and that binds a husband and a wife together for life. And I think, you know, we talked about purity culture when we started this, right? You know, if you wait till marriage to have sex, you're going to have a better sex life, right? And kind of list all these reasons why you should wait. Now, what's the problem with that strategy?
It's not necessarily true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, that's not a promise God gives us.
Yeah.
That's the wrong reason.
Number one that's wrong.
Yeah.
It's the wrong reason.
Yeah. Yeah, it's basically sexual prosperity theology, right?
You're still worshiping the altar of your own gratification.
Yeah, and so who's at the center of it? It's yourself. So when you get into, let's say, talking to young people about why should you wait, right? Because I see boy moms here, right, and girl moms here, so why should you wait? What do you tell them? Why should you wait? Why is it really important that you obey this command?
1 Corinthians 6:19-20. Yeah. Your
body's not your own. Your body is not your own. That is the cornerstone.
Yeah.
Right? Your body doesn't belong to you. You know that, right? Okay, that is the cornerstone of sexual theology.
I mean, the question, you know, waiting for marriage seems like a real drag. If you do not love the Lord, then everything about Christianity is a real drag.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, everything. This is one of many, many, many things. Not taking drugs is a real drag. Not, you know. And so instead of coming back and being like, yeah, well, chlamydia is a drag too. I mean, you know, like, that's what Christians often do. Like, it's
is that why you laughed earlier?
No. But you know what I mean? Like, I think a lot of times we do our, like, pros and cons list. Like, this is why God's way is better and the world's way is not as good. And, like, is that really what we come to in parenting or in, you know, counseling?
Mm-hmm.
No. We don't have to be God's apologist. God is his own apologist. He says, I own your body.
Yeah.
So this is what you do with it.
Yeah.
And for those of us who love the Lord, that command is not burdensome.
Mm-hmm.
It may be hard, but it's not burdensome.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think that is what we just counsel and encourage one another with over and over, is it is an honor to be able to lay your body on the altar as a living sacrifice.
Yeah.
And if it's not an honor for you to do so, then you don't understand Christ's offering himself for
yeah.
you. And, I mean, that's what it comes back to, is this is a gospel question. Do you or don't you give yourself to the Lord?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's a continual sacrifice that you're making when you're single. And I would say, too, you know, there is, you know, if I were to talk to young men in particular, I think there's an issue of your calling as a man is to be a leader, protector, and provider. And it is a noble thing to protect your girlfriend, your sister in Christ, your fiance, from sexual indulgence. And I would say, and I think some of you know, people on both sides, you know, whether you slept together with your spouse beforehand or you didn't, there is a strong correlation between the ability to respect, for the woman to respect the man when they wait. I mean, I've seen that in multiple cases. When they wait, there is a respect there because he showed himself to be a noble, selfless man. And I think that's, you know, so you look at, you know, how do you kind of cultivate sexual purity in young men? It's not just putting internet filters. You know, it's treating them, it's training them to have a high view of women, to respect them, to want to protect them, to want to serve them, to open their car doors, and just do all of those things where, you know, these are treasured women. Because, you know, how does pornography view women?
Objects.
You know, yeah, they're objects. You know, they're sexual victims. That you don't have a relationship with them. You value them for what they can do for you.
That was interesting that did a brain, one of those brain studies, like yeah. where they monitored the parts of the brain that highlight, right? And so they showed men pictures of women fully clothed, pictures of women in bathing suits or whatever. And when they're clothed, it was a part of their mind that's like the thought and the, you know, creativity. And when it was the, you know, scantily clad, it was like objects, you know, the same part of the brain when you show them a hammer or a tool or something like that. It's just, it's an object. Mm. And so they're seen differently.
Yeah.
Literally something to be used.
Right.
Hammer, tool, saw.
Right.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, so I think that's the cornerstone, I think, of obviously your body's not your own, but how do you view women? You know, and that's why it's real important that, you know, fathers treat their wives with a lot of dignity and respect and honor. Right? So that is something that will carry on into the marriage. But I think that is the impulse that will you know, cause them to say, I won't go there because, you know, I love the Lord and I respect you. Okay, other thoughts about that? So, building on this whole young man thing, or young woman thing, let's see if I find pornography on your 13-year-old's computer. What do you do? Let's talk about first reaction. Should you scream, pick at them, and throw the computer through the window? Because I'm so disgusted with you. First reaction, what's the best first reaction that you take?
Have that conversation long before they get on a computer and start watching internet porn.
Yeah.
When they're
If you haven't talked to them before 13, you waited too long. Yeah.
It'll sneak up on you.
Yeah.
You needed that conversation long before.
Yeah.
And it happens before you think they're ready for it.
Yeah.
And there's a curiosity that precedes actual puberty.
Yeah.
And it can sneak up.
By the way, for you parents, a couple recommendations for you. Disney Circle has been fantastic. It's something that you attach to your router, and we have websites that whenever they log on, they can't get to anything. So Disney Circle, look into it, install it. I can help you install it. The other thing is we have Gad Wireless. Leave it to the Mormons to come up with technology that's helpful for this. It looks like a smartphone, but you can call, text, and you can text pictures too for an extra fee, or to group text for an extra fee. It has an FM radio, a calendar, and then a music file system where you can upload sermon. Like, I gave it to my son preloaded with sermons. Oh, I can't listen to anything else, Dad. Oh, it's too bad. Well, I do have those sermons. So, and then it has a GPS tracking device, too, on it. And so you can give it to your sons, and it is impossible for them to look at porn. Okay, so I know some of you have sons out there introducing it. Gab wireless phones, it's reasonable cost, but you just start the lockdown early. Mm-hmm. And we gave it to one of our sons, and he said he's planning on having it indefinitely. Because honestly, when you smartphones in a 13-year-old's hands, they're not smartphones, they're porn portals. They will get there unless you kind of lock it off. And so, like with Chromebooks, if you have your kids in public school, that's why the Circle is really good, because you can't install any filtering software on a Chromebook. So you have to go through the router. So hopefully between what they have at school with the protection there and then what they have at your home, and you just make sure the Chromebook doesn't go anywhere beyond that. So life hack. So Alvin and I, that's something that we've kind of been talking through, is, what's a good approach to technology? And what it does is it buys your kids time. More of the brain gets developed, those images are out, and you kind of reinforce some of the areas.
Mm-hmm. Maybe there's no answer to this, but I'm curious. A lot of my kids, if they can't get on something that they want to get on at school, they just connect to somebody else's mobile hotspot. Mm-hmm. Like, what's to prevent that? Or can't you?
Not on the Chromebook, you can.
Okay. It's all, they have them set up where it's all the still has to be at the source.
One of the reasons we won't send our kids to school. The first one went, we discovered there's no way around this.
And so we have the Disney Circle at home. And they could, you could go to McDonald's. All of our neighborhood, not that I tried to get it on their website, but all of our neighborhood hotspots or whatever, they're locked out. But it's conceivable that a friend could say, oh, you can use mine.
Yeah. If you have a portable one,
If you have a portable one. And that's, you check the history, and you do what you can. But the Disney Circle is really helpful for us. Like, it even blocks out Google searches. It even has, like, a safe search option. So you can do a search. You know how sometimes searches, like, shows images? Sometimes stuff can kind of come across the wire through that, and you're not even looking for it. It's just one of the images. So Google Home is... Disney Circle is a really good thing. And this is the other thing that we did, is we got a Google Home, and part of that is so that people can do searches audibly, right? So what's the capital of South Africa? And instead of looking it up on a screen, they say it to Google Home, and they get the answer that way. So they're not always typing and looking to screens for answers. So that was kind of like what we did to try to rid our home of porn. And then I think the other thing I started doing is I meet with my boys every week, and we talk about it. You have to talk with them, one more successfully than the other. Probably the fun level a little bit more. Here's kind of like,
please stop.
However, do you want to see this illustration? I saw it. All right.
Well. But I think, like, the first time you find something like that, I think it's important that they don't think we're completely shocked and surprised by this.
Yeah.
I think that's something we've tried to do, is we're not surprised. Your dad was a 13-year-old boy at one point, whatever it is, or I was a young girl or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we know, that as you're developing, God is giving you good desires towards the opposite sex. And, what this is a bad expression of that good desire. So I think we've tried to just talk it through calmly and quietly, and we've given them a time and a place where they know if they confess anything in this time when they're doing their meeting with you or whatever, they're not going to get in trouble for it. This is a time where we can help shepherd them, not punish them.
So you don't get punished. You get amnesty during our Bible time. So you confess it to me during this time.
If you confess it rather than being caught, then we're going to help you through it instead of punish you for it type of thing. And so I think that's what we've taken this at, because finding porn that's the Lord giving you a window into their soul.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's a good thing that's really sad.
Yeah.
Like, we've just tried to be like, yep, this is a normal thing. It is sinful. Here's where you've gone wrong. Here's where we want to help direct you. And
yeah, I heard one mother talk about how she found there was a pool toy. And it came in a box with the woman in the bikini, and the husband and the son basically cut up the top of the box and put it under his bed. And so she found it, and then she said, "Well, it's a woman. We'll celebrate that. That's a win." And then she got it. But then talked to him about it. But yeah, I mean, it's when something like that happens, that should increase your relational input.
Yeah, and I was talking to somebody recently about just viewing, you know, having a scriptural view of their heart, and it's not just having a big wall, keeping out the evil from this pure inner city, right? It's the evil starts in their heart, there's a desire start in our heart. And also there's something that we really believe that it helps to surround them with friendships and, you know, of both sexes, and have good, wholesome, because if a boy doesn't have a real good, godly friendship, sister type relationship within their family and the church, it's much easier for them to treat them as an object.
Yeah.
And so having a good, right view and good, right relationships with the same and of the opposite sex is a very good kind of offensive to complement the defensive strategies.
Yeah, one of the passages I go to as well is Colossians 3:5. Put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you, your sexual morality, impurity, passion, evil desire. All of those have a sexual connotation, by the way. And covetousness, which is, or greed, which is idolatry. Now, what's really interesting is how Paul is linking all these selfish sexual desires with a selfish material desire.
Mm-hmm.
And so we always talk about put off and put on. Well, instead of, you know, just don't look at porn, don't look at porn, don't look at porn,
mm-hmm.
it's like, it's more than that. Don't objectify women, honor women. Don't see them as objects. See them as treasured people to be respected. Don't seek to take from them. Seek to give to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so really the antidote to this, like the deep-seated issue, is one of selfishness. And so training them to treat women well, to serve women. How can I help you? How can I use my masculinity to help you instead of using your femininity to serve me? Carry the grocery, you know, saying, so that's a lot. That is what you're trying to point them to and build them up towards. Does that make sense? And that's why, like, when I look at suitors for my daughters, I would want to find an honorable, noble man who is, you know, willing to use his strength to serve. Okay, no? Does this give me guys some good ideas? Things to look for in daughters?
Another scary place, though, where you wouldn't necessarily think of porn when you think of this, but wow, as dating sites.
Mm.
I have a friend who's my age, who's single, and he's shown me some of the dating sites that he looks at. I mean,
some of them are prostitutes.
Well, some of them are just women wanting to date for only sex, and pictures that they'll send to encourage you to go, okay, I'll go on a date with you.
Yeah.
Holy cow. Yeah, it's straight up pornography.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. No dating sites.
Wow.
Unless it's like overtly. I think Chris Ambrose and Jackie, they met on a dating site that wasn't a dating site, but it was like a decidedly Christian.
It's like seriously Christian.
Like seriously
Christian
website.
So it was called
Seriously Christian.
I think Farmers Only, was that it? I remember I was on a ski trip, and I go on a ski trip to Utah, and I have these really wealthy, like highly educated friends, and were watching the game together, and a Farmers Only commercial went on, and I thought, oh, my goodness, don't judge me for this. I mean, because it was just totally, like, leaning into that. But, you know, but that's something where, and I kind of understand the premise, but you don't want, like, Christian Mingle, but, like, a serious Christian website. And I mean, there's a place. There can be a place for that, right? But
it makes me happy that I'm married.
Yeah.
I mean, really, because it's just, it's almost unbelievable.
Yeah.
Some of the stories he's told. Another friend of mine was on dating sites for a while, and remember he went to Topeka and took that lady out to eat, and when he pulled up to the drive, or to the parking lot, she was in the car, like, getting clean, like, she lived in her car. And by dating people on the website, that's how she got food.
Oh, my goodness.
And once he kind of learned this during the process of the dinner, he's like, I got to figure out how to get her. And he also felt bad because he drove a BMW. And he's like, I got to find a way to leave and go not to my car so she doesn't think I'm rich and try to, like, you know, really hold on to this. So it's just a bizarre world out there. Thank you.
I think, too, there's a sense in which, you know, being a teacher and seeing kids just changing over the years in some ways in the culture. Sometimes just not being naive that focusing on problems as just being for boys a lot of times, the culture is really sexualizing more the girls and encouraging them to be more assertive, more aggressive. Yeah. And so it's not only teaching your boys and girls to have self-control, but also to be aware of predators.
And that's the thing. If you treat your, if you train your sons to be very noble, kind men, the wrong type of women are going to be attracted to them as well. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, they're nice, they're kind, they're, they have earning potential. The wrong women will be attracted to them. And I've kind of noticed that, like, when I've, like, discipled young men, I've had to, like, keep the women away from them because they realize, you know, meal ticket. I mean, just all the wrong motivations, too. So there's, I mean, it's, marriage is a good thing. Just getting there can be kind of hard sometimes. Right. So, well, just to kind of wrap this up, in the words of Christ, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. The quest for sexual purity must be rooted in a desire for intimacy with God. The Lord does not sit up in heaven trying to stop his creation from having fun. Rather, he intends for his creation to fully enjoy the world he has made on his terms. Sex is a gift from God, a beautiful expression of love between husband and wife, when celebrated within the parameters of the biblical revelation. Yet, when indulged in a manner outside God's prescribed ways, Satan uses sex to enslave, ensnare, and exploit both believers and unbelievers alike. Thus, it is of the utmost importance that we strive to be holy in this area to maintain our witness to the world and our intimacy with God. So next week, Scott's going to be reading out on birth control. I'm going to be gone for a couple weeks and teaching a baptism class. So if any of you guys have questions about baptism, want to be a part of that, we're going to be up in the chapel. Let me pray and you'll be dismissed. Well, Father, I do thank you for this, this candid conversation. I trust that it was helpful. And I pray that all of us and the whole church will really surrender our bodies to you, that we will realize that our bodies don't belong to us, but they belong to you, and that we'll honor you in our bodies. Pray this in Christ's name. Amen.